Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Jonky.
G'day mate, I think it's a pretty good week for us too, but in a very, very difficult week for a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't want to celebrate too hard because, I know there was a lot of heartache out there and we got a lot of comments saying, why isn't Supercoach fun anymore? But we actually had pretty decent rounds and as a community, we are scoring sort of relatively better than everyone else. We have 12 of the top 17 leagues, something we're really proud of. So hopefully it's some consolation to you guys out there if you've had a poor week that at least as a whole you're helping fly the flag a little bit, and with another week hopefully things will pick up for your own team.
I am a little bit upset about one thing, mate.
What's that?
I finally entered the top 1000. Should be pretty stoked about that. Should be able to come on the podcast and rub it in, but you ranked higher than me.
I forgot about that briefly, because I am on holidays in Korea recording this at the moment, Mark. So it was a bit difficult to pay too much attention to the football. I'm trying my best to enjoy the holiday while I'm here. But I had a good round and I pipped you by just 8 points, which is pretty funny. But no, I'm very, very happy to
not
be
very funny
in the top. I love how competitive you are about it, but I love being in the top 1000 with you, mate, this early on in the season. I don't think we've been in the top 1000 together in round 4 for, I don't know, maybe even the entire time that we've done this show. I don't remember starting off this well together.
Sure. So I think last year we did spend a number of weeks in the top 1000 together, but it's just this early. So I guess, what is that, a really good start and where we could really consolidate, or is it just a long way to fall?
I'm hoping the first, mate. So all we can do is try to keep it up, but I'm hoping, you know, this is the sort of year we can both finish in the top 100 together. We've never done that before. That'd be a fair achievement. So positivity, optimism and all that.
That's a fair bit of optimism, mate. I think the other thing is that I'm just looking at my home screen now and it says my worst player this week was one David Swallow.
Yeah, yep. That was something I was... I didn't think you'd bring him up for me, mate, but I'll wait to the personal update to get real psyched up about that. So why don't you let us know how you actually scored over the weekend, Mark?
Sure. So 21.02, which I didn't feel like I was way, way behind all weekend, but I felt like I wasn't going great. And then Rocky happened, 176. And I know, same for you, mate. That was obviously monstrous, and he just kept getting bigger and bigger as the game went on, which I guess you'd hope that they do. But I not too many things went really bad for me. I had Heath Shaw, 79. He looked a bit injured. David Swallow was, I guess, the really bad one, 46. Apparently hurt his ankle early in the game. Treloar, 72. I guess that's really bad. Danger captain, but I think I was lucky, like, everyone had danger captain. So it sort of didn't matter in the end.
Mm. I know a few of our community members went with Dalhouse off your recommendation, Mark, and they were very, very happy with that this week. I think that was an exceptional score for a vice-captain, so you got a few thank yous for that over the weekend. And I have to thank you myself for Rockliffe, because even though, you know, I did bring him in as a late pivot from Pendlebury, and I sort of gassed for options, you were the first one that sort of put it into my mind, so... 176, we are both sitting pretty in the top 1000 and he's got a lot to do with that.
As you'd be well aware, Marcus, I'm happy to take all of the credit.
All right, I'll go into what I scored, mate. 21.64 for me. I realized only late in the piece, actually after I saw your team, Mark, that with Hibbert in my midfield, because of bringing Newman in, I could have actually pivoted Adams into my midfield to take over a rookie spot there and then actually play Marchbank on field, which is kind of a no-brainer. So I could have had Marchbank on field over Parfitt, which was a bit of a mistake, but it was only 22 points, so I'm not really going to cry over that spilt milk. Happy overall, like I said... just skipped over you by 8 points, which I'm really, really happy about. do want to mention my trade. So I did double trade last weekend. I got rid of O'Meara when he was a late omission, but to be honest, regardless, he was already out of my team before I saw that news, and Taranto out as well. I was tossing up between Yeo, because I know from the first three games he'd already moved into the back line, and Tommy Lynch, in terms of price point, and Green. Those were the three blokes that I was looking at. I brought in Green, 84.
You chose wrong.
Yep, and I mean, gosh, for the first week to be punished that badly, the other two options, 145 and 161, jeebus, that hurt a little bit. I would have been absolutely flying if I brought in one of the other two. But Toby Green, 84, kicked four goals, two in the clutch last quarter. Just not too tidy with his disposals, cost him a little bit there. But if he was a bit tidier, that could have been a 120, 130 game. So I'm just hoping, you know, if he maintains a 96.5 average, I'll be pretty happy. So I can't complain too much there. Yeah. And happy to get rid of another mid-pricer and move closer to a more true guns and rookie strategy. And in fact, that trade, I think we got quite a few questions about this week in terms of, you know, should we ditch O'Meara and sort of try and force an early upgrade this week? So we'll get into that shortly. But before we do...
So I just want to touch on the team setup that you saw on my team, just in case people aren't aware of it, if they do have this option. At the moment, I've got Hibbard on field in the back line with Newman with the emergency on him. And I've got in the midfield, I've got Pal Pepper with the emergency and Adams sitting in the midfield. So Pal Pepper plays Friday night. If he scores really well, I'll move Adams back and leave Newman or Hampton or someone, one of the other defenders on the bench, and just make Hibbard on my field in the midfield.
Yeah.
So you can loophole Pal Pepper versus Newman, which seems like a pretty good option.
Yeah. And I hate to say it and give you more credit, but that's why you listen to the show, for nuggets like those. I mean, these small edges, seriously, they make a huge difference at the end of the year. When you're talking about choosing between a premium that, you know, averages 110 and 115, in the grand scheme of things, they very rarely make a difference. But it's when you can get a really good rookie on field instead of a crap rookie and build that up over time that you really start getting big edges and pushing yourself up into that top 1,000. So, yeah, I really like that, Mark, and I'll be playing with the same approach this week myself. All right, group update. Let's go to our top scorer for our Supercoach Coach group. Blue Thunder scored 23-18. I'm not sure if that was the same Blue Thunder that won Supercoach a few years ago, Mark. I wonder whether that is him.
Be interesting.
That's pushed him up to be ranked in the top 40,000 now, but absolutely massive score for that week. So congrats to him. Also, a shout out to Kyle. His team is Tyrannosaurus Tex. He scored 22-54 and is ranked 14th overall. So congrats to him. To our leagues, we have 12 of the top 17, as we've already mentioned, something we're really, really psyched about. So don't forget next year, if you're not in one of our leagues this year, to get involved. And well done to everybody that's contributing to that. We've got more in the top 100 as well, Mark.
I think that's really easy to say about how many we have up there. We have 8 of the top 10 leagues. It's not as if we're flooding the market with leagues either. Like,
yeah.
8 of the top 10 is just an insane level of domination for this stage of the year.
Yeah. I create about 20 public leagues, sometimes close to 30, and we get 10 public ranked leagues. And I think there's probably another 10 miscellaneous ones on top of that. So we have about 40 to 50 leagues each year. So you're right, Mark. It's not like we're flooding the market with it. And we get a few knockers on us saying, you know, to be able to achieve this, you must be cheating a little bit. But we've done it year after year after year. So I've given up sort of trying to argue that point. We're doing exceptionally well as a community. So well done to everyone out there. You got 28 trades, or, you know, 20 plus trades to go wherever you are. So even though it was a tough week, keep your chin up, and we need you all pulling your weight so that we can stay up there, Mark.
Yeah.
All right, to the rundown for the week. We're going to be discussing, there's three rookies on the bubble, and discussing, you know, rookie trade strategy early on in the season, whether or not to move rookies out early on when they haven't sort of reached their peak. We're going to talk about underperforming premiums and potentially a few tempting performers after the first four rounds of the season. So let's get straight into it, mate. So the first question is about the rookies, and it's from Crazy CO on Twitter. When is it okay to trade out rookies that still have a break even below their average? So starting off with a bit more of a conceptual one, because I think it'll feed into the rest of the rookie questions, because we're all faced with unfortunately, rookies that haven't quite reached their peak yet. So, Mark, I know last week we traded out, or some of us traded out rookies that haven't peaked yet for Nick Newman. And I think that's sort of the main category that you'd sort of tick off performing that dirty trade, getting rid of a player that hasn't reached their peak. It's when you really, really want a must-have almost rookie like Nick Newman that's gone up 80K in a single week and that you can't really afford to miss out on.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Would there be any other scenarios where you'd consider that, or you pretty much limited it to that?
Look, I guess if you really wanted, like you had almost enough money for an upgrade, I've got a player like Oliver Florent, and I can imagine a situation in an easy game where maybe he kicks three or four goals and could post a good score, but that seems fairly unlikely. He seems like his role is going to make him about the 40 to 60 sort of maximum score. So his break even's 24, so he's sort of heading in that direction. He may not make a heap more money. I really don't see the potential for him to make a huge amount of money there. So he's a player that I'd maybe look to trade out this week if I wanted to bring someone in, or a player that maybe looks like getting dropped, or a player that their break even and average isn't actually too far apart, even though it's still below. Like Taranto, I think, has a break even of like 38, 40 this week, and his average is about 60. So, look, it's probably a little bit early on Taranto. You probably give him what you paid for him, hoping that he spikes a decent score at some point and actually gets up to 300,000, 350,000. But that's the sort of situation that I'd be looking at where I might trade someone. I think maybe Pau Pepper this week is break even of 41, scored 41 on the weekend, but I think he's still got a couple of big scores left in him, so I'd be patient with him.
And the problem with just looking at break evens and averages is you're assuming that they're going to keep to the exact same average that they've maintained for only four rounds, which is a small sample size. So it's not long enough for their average to really be reliable. And so, yeah, I agree with that. Even though SPP looks like he's just about peaked, the reality is he has another score of 80 or 90. His price will go up to a healthy 280, 300, which would be closer to what you really want to get out of a rookie. So I think early on in the season, it's really hard to warrant trading out players below their break even until you get closer to the buys where you really need that cover and you're a bit more ruthless with trading out guys that aren't getting games. But at this stage, you're still hoping that they spike a big score, or even if they're dropped, that they might come back into the team. So we'll move on to the next question here. This one's from Tandy on Facebook. He's asking about Mitch Hibbert and Brett Eddy, who are currently dropped from their teams. Do we trade them out, and if so, for whom? Again, I just mentioned about perhaps having a little bit more patience with these guys because they still could come back in the team and spike another 60K. I mean, Hibbert hasn't even increased in price, and Eddie's at 140 with a low break even. So I think his last score was a 70 as well. I really struggle to trade out Eddie. Hibbert, I could potentially see that, but you know, that DPP flexibility is getting you some nice loophole opportunities this week as well, Mark. So I'd be tempted to hold both of those blokes.
Yeah, look, I've got a little bit of a different perspective from the fact that I traded Eddie out last week, and that I would be open to trading Hibbert. Although I like the DPP action going on, I'd definitely be open to it if the right situation presented. And I just think that if you're going to make a trade from a rookie where you don't make any money, you're actually better off doing it early in the season where you can bring someone else in and still use their money. So if I considered someone like Balik essential this week, then I'd definitely be open to trading one of those guys out.
A lot of this will depend on your team structure. Eddie made sense to sort of move out of Mark's team last week, whereas it didn't really make as much sense to move out of my team last week, but I think it could work out positively either way. So next question here is from Nathan. Go early on a trade of SPP to bring in Balik.
Sure, I just think that Pau Pepper, given what we saw in the first couple of weeks, they've had a pretty tough draw over the first month of footy, so I think that their draw might open up a little bit. And I know he copped a knock early against Adelaide. I think that he's definitely got some bigger games left in him and a bunch more money to make. And I think if you trade him out now and then he goes on to be worth 350,000 and score a bunch of points on field for people, you will be regretting it pretty hard.
Would you trade out, you know, a different rookie potentially to bring in Balik instead? You know, a Hibbert or an Eddy type, you're more likely to get rid of them, maybe even a Jared Pickett than SPP?
I think Pickett's probably a good example that I would actually, even though he's worth $76,000 or $74,000 less, I'd actually be more willing to trade Pickett than I would Power Pepper, because I know Pickett could definitely post a good score, but I don't see Pickett posting two good scores back to back.
Next question here is from Phil Trificante on Facebook. Which rookies, if any, should we be bringing in this week? So we've talked about Balik. The other two rookies on the bubble are Williamson and Berry. Balik obviously has the DPP flexibility, was really attractive, but yeah. Williamson actually has a lower break-even mark. His break-even's negative 53 after 77 and 45 in his first two games.
I'm really not sure. I think he was a pretty low draft pick. You'd think he'd get games, but whether he plays every week, I'm not so sure. He did seem to die after halftime. He had a good start to the game, but really struggled after halftime on the weekend. Personally, I think Balik, absolute must-have, a bit like Newman. Like, I would be moving stuff in my team before it's ready to go to bring Balik in. I probably wouldn't for Williamson. And part of the reason for that is for Carlton, Fisher looked really good on the weekend. And I know he's pretty small to be playing AFL, but just his tackling pressure and
Fisher
just seemed
looked
to
good.
Score. He scored 70-odd on the weekend. So if he's someone that you might want to bring in next week, then maybe you can't afford to burn too many of these rookies too early. So I guess you just got to prioritize around that. And to bring in Balik and Williamson, I'm guessing you're burning two rookies earlier than you should.
Mm. Yeah. And on top of Newman already, right?
Yeah.
Jared Berry, he does have that DPP flexibility being a back mid, but he's also priced a little bit more at the 139,000 mark. And he's scoring 32 and 29 so far. Not inspiring a huge amount of confidence there. I'm guessing he's probably a no this week.
If he was named round one, I definitely would have picked him, but I do expect him to get games. He'll probably have a good game at some point, but yeah, that scoring makes it very difficult to bring him in.
That's probably it for the rookies, Mark. Let's talk about some outs now, or potential outs, Mark. So we're getting on to some underperforming premiums. We'll start off with this question here from Shannon Swan. He'd be interested to know if there are any preseason selections that we would be shifting before it's too late. There was a lot of love for Treloar, Tom Mitchell. I think we had some love for him, but maybe not as strong. But Treloar is definitely one that we were enamored over that hasn't quite panned out. With four rounds of information, has that changed? Is it time now for a side swap? There's a tendency to sort of be tentative about these decisions because it's side swap, sort of involves side swapping. But then there's also a natural tendency because of that to not potentially be brave enough with being cutthroat, which Shannon sort of references here as well. Your thoughts on side swapping premiums after four rounds of information?
The earlier you do it, the better, because then you get a bigger reward for doing that. Treloar is 562. I think Mark Murphy's about the same. Mark Murphy's averaging way more than Treloar at the moment. I'd still say they average within 5 points of each other, or Treloar beats Mark Murphy for the rest of the year. Like,
yeah,
I know that's
a massive
call
based
on what we've seen over the first 4 weeks, but I'd still hold that prediction. So, look, I think he might be right that maybe there should be more moves with premiums. And I don't know that we sort of had an extra trade left at the end of last year, maybe. But yeah, I just think the premiums turn it around. And Mark Murphy's averaging like 138 or something. He is not going to do that for the whole season. So the fact that you've missed four of his really, really good scores means it's even more difficult to pick him in a sense.
And I think a lot of people are looking at the differential at the moment, and it's 137 versus 96. So Murphy's outscoring him by more than 41, which is 160 points so far, which is massive. But 100% agree with what you're saying there, Mark. Things will normalize. We saw Dangerfield score 90 on the weekend just because he copped a hard knock, because he's a number one mid in Geelong and he's going to get hard knocks. Like, the same thing will happen to Murphy if he keeps this type of scoring up. So kudos to anyone that started him, but to be side swapping is just fraught with danger. Treloar, even though he's not playing as well as you'd hoped, I don't think anyone that started him would be confident or would even be assuming that he's going to average 96 for the rest of the season. He will have a massive game where he has 36 disposals and happens not to butcher the ball with every single bloody one of them. And I expect that to equalize very much so. So I agree with that, even though it's very painful to have to hold on for the moment. But that's very sound advice.
Yeah.
And Mitchell especially, He scored 105, butchering the ball, getting cheap kicks, and with Hawthorn 0-4. Even though Mitchell was sort of a late addition to my team, I'm still happy with his performances.
I think he's come very close to top scoring for Hawthorn every week. It's just that their overall numbers have been pretty low. I know people that have traded out, like Tom Lynch and Nick Riewoldt, and they've come back and posted huge games. And geez, that hurts when that happens.
All right, we've got the next question here from Michael Andrew Parker. Shaw, basically sort of same question as before. Are you concerned about him? And I guess there's maybe additional concerns because of a potential sort of ankle soreness over the weekend.
Definitely a little bit concerned about Shaw, and I was before the weekend. I actually really strongly considered trading Shaw for a premium midfielder, but the premium midfielder was going to be Dusty, and that wouldn't have had a great first week's result. Look, Shaw, I mean, they had to chuck him forward in the end because he was clearly injured and hobbling around, so I'm not sure what the injury status is on him at the moment, whether he'll play this weekend, but if he's playing, he's sort of already lost 75,000. He hasn't put in a really terrible game yet. I know he had a 50-odd, but he's not going to go down to 400,000, you wouldn't think. And if you think about it, do you have Shaw, Marcus?
No, I don't, fortunately.
No, but there's a really good chance that you would like to bring
him. For sure. I'm sort of is he playing this week? I mean, his break-even's 120. He seems to have bottomed out. I've got Zach Tui. It's getting closer. Do I side swap?
It's really, really hard to trade out a player that everyone else is going to want to bring in.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And that's why I think that's when you can tell you're potentially making sort of a dodgy trade. Nick Riewoldt, although he was injured, Tom Lynch. If people love him, just because they're doing poorly over the first four games, I think you maybe recalibrate with some of that external love and bring some balance into your sort of evaluation of that player. So if he doesn't play this week, would that change things, Mark?
Probably not, depending on the diagnosis or the prognosis. But look, I don't really see myself trading him out.
Mm-hmm. All right, the next question here is from Andrew Henley. This one's about Jared Ruffhead. Now, 0-4, and we weren't hot on him, but he's in 77,000 teams. So even though we didn't recommend him, I feel like we need to address him because some people ended up with him, which I think now we can say is a bit unfortunately, having averaged 76. He has still gone up 21K, so not all is lost, but it's definitely not ideal. I kind of feel that once you've picked a player like him, you're committed to waiting for a big score. What are your thoughts about that?
He was really, really average on the weekend, but I guess, a lot of the Hawks were. He just wasn't really in the game at all. But before that, he sort of looked like he was building a little bit towards some good scores and scored 99 in the big loss against the Gold Coast. I can definitely see the temptation to bring in a premium now because it's not very expensive to do so. You could downgrade Taranto and upgrade Ruffy to an absolute gun. So I can, you get that quick upgrade in, which feels good. I can definitely see why people would be willing to do that, but I can also see what you're saying about just hang on because he's a good player and he will score decent at some point. So I think there's arguments both ways and it depends on the rest of your team structure.
I just think, in comparison to O'Meara and Swallow, even though they're playing in the midfield, Ruffhead's Hawthorn's captain. He's averaged 110 before. I just think surely you hope as a key position forward that plays in the midfield, Hawthorn finally snaps into elite mode for one game and Ruffy scores 140 and that sees him spike to, 500,000 and that's kind of when you get rid of him. I just feel like you're almost priced into just holding on to him. I guess it ties in nicely to the next question here, and that's what happens if you have two mid prices? So Kurt Atkins is asking about trading both O'Meara and Ruffy out and going one primo and one rookie. So I did that with O'Meara and Taranto last week, and so this option does look attractive to me. This is sort of where I'd consider trading out Ruffy. If you can bring in a Bontempelli, I wish I started him, and a Balik, right, for O'Meara Ruffy, does that become a lot more attractive?
That situation does seem like it makes a lot more sense. You're going to more guns and rookies, and O'Meara and Ruffy don't really seem to be working out. Look, I'm just a little bit cautious on this because it would not surprise me at all if both of those guys scored over 100 on the weekend. I'm just leaning towards being reasonably conservative with trades at the moment. So from that perspective, although it seems really obvious on paper and on first sight, I have some reservations about it as well.
I think because I was trading out one rookie and one mid-pricer for a premium and a rookie, I kind of got to upgrade a mid-pricer to a premium, and I downgraded from Taranto to, I don't know, just another rookie. But that's not a huge downgrade. Whereas if you're getting rid of two mid-pricers, you're right, Mark, Ruffy has the potential to burn you on top of Omira. So that does change the equation a little bit. So I actually think I would agree with you there. Having said that, though, I would be tempted to trade out, I guess, a Ruffy and a Taranto, or a Miro and Taranto to sort of upgrade either to a premium at this early stage. As long as you like the rookie in as well. So Newman was a bit more of a no-brainer last week. Balik, I guess, maybe a bit more questions about.
Definitely more questions than Newman, but I'm still pretty keen.
I'm guessing, based on the conversation, Swallow and Yago, Mira, if you had that combination, you probably wouldn't be looking at sort of double swapping them out for a Primo rookie.
No, but I'd tempted to get rid of one.
You would?
Just to trade them into a rookie and then upgrade somewhere else on your team. Yeah, well, I would be tempted to minimize the exposure. It seems pretty exposed having both of those at the moment.
So if you had Swallow, Omira and Ruffy, would you potentially trade one of the two midfield mid-prices and Ruffy out for Primo rookie?
Look, it's tricky to say because I think that things can go differently this season, but yes, I'd be very tempted to do that.
All right, and then just to finish out in terms of potential outs, Ross Martin asking about whether or not we should just kill off Omira at this early stage.
Look, I mean, the fact that he scored 44 in his last game means that you're really relying on him coming back and scoring quite well, and those points on field making a difference for you, and him keeping it up consistently so that you can finally get some money out of him, because at the moment with that 44 or 43 or whatever it was rolling through his price, it's going to be difficult for him to make money in the short term and be a short-term upgrade.
I think I agree with that too, Mark. So, all right, let's move on to the ins. Scott McNaughton's asking whether or not Murphy and Steph Martin are moving toward must-haves. Thoughts on that, Mark?
I think must-have is a term that's thrown around far too much, and I think that there's a lot of ways to skin a cat in Supercoach, and there are not many players that are must-haves. I think Martin is much more likely to be a must-have than Murphy, because now Murphy's at 560. He's sort of getting towards premium price. I don't see him averaging more than Pendles this year. So there's other players that you could pick instead of him. Whereas Steph Martin, if he does average, which is averaging 120 at the moment, if he averages anything near that, he could be way ahead of the other ruckman and could prove to be a must-have. I'm not sure that he can keep it going for a whole season, but he has kind of done it before.
Steph Martin is definitely an interesting one, but my major concern about sort of trading into a ruck at this early stage is sort of, are you trading out Sandy, Witts? Like, if you have Goldstein or Gorn, like, surely you would have side-swapped already. Like, I don't see many opportunities for bringing in a 550k ruck in round five without serious restructuring, and I wouldn't seriously restructure to bring in Martin. All right, we'll move on to this next question from Chris Connors. What's the best Primo mid under 631k? But I think we can open up this question a little bit as just sort of, what's the best Primo mid? There's some people looking sort of to upgrade, downgrade one of those mid prices and hitting a premium mid early on as an early upgrade. Thoughts on sort of must-haves? He's called out Bont, Selwood, Rocky, Martin, a few of the sort of early guns. Yeah. I guess you can chuck Murphy in there. Like, is there any standout mid that... Yeah, Sloan, is there any standout mid that you go, gee, I really want him in? Bont, secretly for mine. Well, not secretly, outward.
Well, I've got Selwood and Rocky out of those ones, and they're pretty happy to have those guys. Out of the ones that look like they could just take their scoring to another level and be like that sort of player that you're talking about, that's sort of 5-10 points ahead of everyone else, the ones that stand out for me are Bont and Martin. Bont just keeps getting done every single week at the moment, and he's like, he has Pendle's effectiveness. Like, every kick that he kicks into the forward 50 leads to a score, an effective mark. And if you want to know why Treloar doesn't score as much, just look at what happens when he kicks the ball inside the forward 50. And Dusty, look, I think that Robinson was an anomaly. I think Dusty was probably the one before this week that I was looking at. He seems like he could have a Dangerfield type year, and that maybe that's overstating him a little bit, and maybe Richmond won't win all the time, but he's someone that I would be very keen to get into my team, and I've only got two midfield spots left. I'd be more than happy if they were taken up by Dusty and Bond.
Yeah, I'm struggling, man. I've got one. I don't have Pendlebury, Martin, or Bontempelli, because I do not know what I'm going to do this season, and that's why it's making me shake my fist at Treloar extra hard. But yeah, no, I think those are fair points.
You've got to realize that you're going to end up with an injured mid or two at some point.
But you just don't want to miss the train. I guess the FOMO is very real at this point of the season. So, if gun to my head, I would pick Bont just because my knock on Martin is that when he gets locked down, he struggles and sort of that panned out. Whereas Bontempelli, he is so efficient that even when he gets locked down, only hits 20 possessions. Like his 20 possessions are so potent, he can hit 100 with those 20. So I'd go Bont, then Martin. Rocky, I think, to be honest, I think we probably should be rating him slightly higher as well, because just both of us have him, we're maybe taking him for granted a little bit. I mean, Selwood included, but
He's the
Rocky
one
and
that has the
Selwood.
scores on the board.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And we picked Rocky because he had a point to prove, and he's certainly out there proving a point at the moment. So if I didn't have him,
Actually,
I'd be pretty tempted.
I picked Rocky because he had a point to prove. You picked Rocky because I picked him, and you picked Rocky.
Fantastic. All right, last question for the week. Fozzie Wolf is asking about a player on the bubble, Brandon Matera. He's played two games, averaged 128 in those two games. Break even now of negative 62. He's at 331K. Previously never really averaged past 75. Is he a trap or is there some real potential here?
What raises the concerns for me is that he was not selected round one and two, and I don't think he was selected round three. I think he was actually a late in, and came in and kicked six goals. So obviously has a point to prove, but there's a reason why he wasn't in the team for the first couple of weeks. On top of that, because I did see his break even, and I thought, like, I remembering your Mitch Wallace move, Marcus, where you bring someone in and they're that mid price and you just hope they get like a huge flush of cash. But even with his 150, if he scores 60 the next 3 weeks, which given his previous average and given who they play over the next 3 weeks is actually quite possible, he only goes up like 60 or 70,000. So because he already starts at 330, it's really hard for him to make money. He needs another one big game, another 100, another couple of 80s or 90s in that to make anything near what you'd need to consider acceptable. And really, like, you're bringing in a stepping stone here. If Matera goes on and averages 95 plus for the season, that would blow my mind. It's not something I could see coming at all. So definite trap for me.
As we do each week, or we try to do as long as time permits, a captain's corner. Mark, have you thought about captain so far this week?
I have, mate. And given what he did on the weekend, and maybe I'm a bit late, Rockliffe for the vice captain looks pretty good. He plays before Freo, which is an important consideration for my team. And Danger with the captain again. I think if you can, making Danger the captain is just the obvious thing to do. I mean, he scored 90 and got a massive whack on the weekend, so that's an awesome result. But look, I'm a little bit worried about what Dangerfield will produce this week, because I reckon that knock to the kidneys, ribs sort of thing is going to hurt for another week. But yeah, I think Rocky into Danger as often as I can is probably the way to go.
Hibbard, Barrett, Cameron, Strandika, and Eddie are the guys that you're likely to have as a loophole. And based on those players, sort of the last opportunity that you do get to have for loopholing is that Saturday night at sort of 7:25, 7:40. You got Sydney, Freo, and North Melbourne all playing in that time slot. So you're basically picking your vice captain from the first three games. And based off that, I do like your suggestion about Rockliffe. Sort of if you're stuck, you've got your Dalhouse again. You've also got Doherty, Gray, if you were sort of stuck with having to pick a vice captain off Jake Barrett. But I like your Rocky selection, Mark. I'm not too sure how many people out there necessarily have him, so I'm just sort of trying to scout for a few more
Yeah, I mean,
options.
like, if you've got a Sloan type, he'd be pretty good. Maybe even a JPK against the Giants, but Giants can sort of hold teams back a little bit. Maybe, it's hard to see too many options outside of that, though.
Yeah, Ablett, you just got to give the dice to sort of who's playing, I think, in those first three games. But Rocky definitely seems like, oh, maybe even Dane Beams, Mark. We definitely forgot about him. He's quieted down a little bit, but he's capable of punching out of 140 as well. So he might be a decent one.
Yep, agree with that.
All right. So I think that's it for this week, mate. Thanks very much for joining me. And hopefully we stay in that top 1,000, mate.
Yeah, that'd be nice if we could ride it out for a little while, eh? And have a nice rest of your tripping career, mate.
Cheers, buddy. I'll be back not doing this for my holiday next week, which I'm looking forward to. Hopefully, it doesn't take too long to get out. So, thanks very much, mate, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
Yeah. Don't want to get crazy. Don't want to get crazy. Don't want to get crazy.